What's up, guys? Welcome to this podcast. My name is Solomon Ali, at Solomon Ali NBA on Twitter, joined by Dan Favalli of Bleacher Report. Dan, how you doing?
I am doing well, Solomon. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Summer's kicking along. I'm starting to slow down my uploads. I think that's going to be kind of the goal here, just kind of slow it down to like once a month until the season starts, because there's not much to continuously podcast about if you're a team podcaster. If you're an NBA podcaster, I imagine there's a bunch, right?
Yeah, I have a problem. I need to do a better job of slowing down in the off season to where I feel obligated to edit these like really high level TikTok videos or podcasts like 5 days a week, and it's stupid. I need to use this time to unplug. So kudos to you if you're able to do it.
I have the opposite problem. I have a tough time starting back up again when it's time.
Okay.
Yeah, because like in about a month or probably about 2 months, we're going to really have to start kicking up the production. And I'm going to have to drag myself here every week, every day, and produce content. And it's going to be tough to get myself back into gear. But I'll manage. No one's complaining about us. So let's start here. What did you think of what the Rockets did this summer? Because I haven't talked to you all summer. There's obviously a lot there in that question. You have the players they took in the draft, free agency, overall asset management. Like, what's your overall takeaway from what they did?
I liked most of it. I mean, you can't dislike the Cam Whitmore swing in the draft when he falls that far. They were in the mix for him at number 4 at one point when he was still being mentioned within that group. So theoretically, to get a guy you were looking at number 4 while also using the number 4 pick and getting him and Amen Thompson, who I'm a lot higher on after watching more film on him, seeing his very brief stint in summer league. I actually like Asar a little bit better. Just because I think I trust the jumper to come along more with him. There's something a little bit slower about Amen's that I don't trust, but his physical tools on defense, then his passing and the speed when he's on the ball, and even that should be able to be utilized off the ball. So I like integrating those picks. I like adding Fred VanVleet. We had talked about him a lot right after the Rockets hired Ime Udoka and like how to figure out that hire and what they would do from here. He is good. The deal is it's short term. It's a 2-year deal, basically. And if they want the third year, they can have the third year. He's great connective tissue. He can organize your offense, but doesn't have to organize your offense. He's so used to working without the ball, as we saw with Toronto, specifically during his years with Kyle Lowry. I don't really think, when you look at this, the only thing that you could potentially dislike, the Dylan Brooks addition, the money guaranteed $86 million is a lot, but also the machinations through which they went to get there. This isn't Dan's in love with Usman Garuba still, even though I am. It's just the amount of second round equity and like players they needed to move around to make it happen. I'm sure it's because they thought Brook Lopez was going to pan out and didn't, and that would be a miscalculation on their part then. That's the only thing to feel uneasy about. And then sort of this team is so much more intriguing now on paper after watching Jabari Smith Jr. in Summer League 2. But I do worry there's so many intriguing pieces. How do you turn that into this coherent, I don't even want to say product, but rotation, to where there's more than 12 guys, basically, that I think you could make an argument for who deserve minutes. And so it's fascinating, but I think overall, I don't know why you would dislike their offseason. I don't know what there are things that you could quibble, like I said, the way that they got Dylan Brooks. But other than that, I thought that they had a really great offseason.
And I think I had you on after the Udoka hire. You were a fan of that, right?
I understood it. I just think whatever happened in Boston, I guess, happened. And it's unfortunate that it did happen. But they felt comfortable enough moving forward, clearly. And to the Rockets' credit, they were not the only team that was going to hire Ime Udoka. And so that's not a defense of what happened off the court with that relationship one way or the other. From a purely basketball perspective, I think you have to like it. It'll be interesting to see how some of the incumbents respond to his more, it's not rigid or strict, but like hands-on coaching style or enforcement style after going through a couple years with Steven Silas, where the talk was around the NBA that there's just no discipline or rhyme or reason there. But I think having him coupled with the vets that are coming in, specifically Jeff Green's a great locker room guy, and Fred VanVleet, of course, I think that ends up really helping them behind the scenes and ends up helping guys like a Jalen Green specifically, and then maybe even a Jabari Smith Jr. a little bit, but just having those sort of rocks in there behind the scenes. And I think I'm very interested to see how this team plays defensively under Ime Udoka. I think he has the ability to get creative, but again, there's just so many different moving pieces here and lineup combinations that you could skew towards, I'm fascinated to see with some of the rotation and then stylistic decisions he ends up making.
Yeah, he may have already helped out Jabari Smith. I mean, the word coming out is he was the driving force behind Jabari playing in Summer League and Tari Eason. So, and I think that's actually going to help him because he needed that confidence after how last season was. I think he needed something to kind of reinforce, like, hey, like I'm a really good draft prospect, and I may not have been the number one overall pick, but that I was in play for the number one overall pick for a time being, for a time, and like that means that I have the potential of being pretty good in the NBA.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes it's okay to just like reconfirm that, and I think that was a good move by Udoka to kind of convince him to do that. So I ended up giving them like a C plus/B minus on their free agency. I like the players that they added. I don't think they got great dollar for dollar value on their cap space, particularly actually the Van Vliet deal. Because I think Van Vliet's like a very good player, right? I think he got paid like $13 million a year too much by the Rockets.
Okay.
I was very concerned, by the reporting after he opted out of his deal. It's like, oh, so he's looking for like a major bag, like a serious amount of money. And it became pretty clear that, okay, it's going to be some sort of max. It's going to be what kind of incarnation of that max. And, we got a 2+1 here. I loved the Londale and Green contracts, actually. I think it's the sneakiest good thing Houston did this summer. They basically added two rolling trade exceptions at $8 million apiece. Those contracts, I think, are imminently valuable. You can put the players aside because the reality is we're in the second apron era, and those last 3 years are non-guarantees. And to have a team... let's say you're at the deadline and you want to get an asset or you want to get more assets for like a player or two, right? If you add in those two contracts, you're talking about $16 million in expiring money that a team could just wipe off their books. I think that's valuable, or like even if it's not about the cap space, it's about getting even more under that second apron that I think did seem to have an effect on teams on how they operated this summer.
That's an interesting way. I feel like that might be a harsh grade for them. What would
just their free agency? It's just their free agency,
right? And I get what you're saying from a dollar perspective, but I guess the question would be, what else did you want them? What was out there for them to do that they didn't do? Is how I would look at it. And the Dylan Brooks thing, if you're gonna give them a demerit for that, more power to you. I think it's extremely risky, but apparently Ime Udoka really wanted him there. And so maybe they'll be able to kind of rein him in offensively because he's a fantastic defensive player. When the Grizzlies just came out and said, under no circumstances will he'll be back, you knew some other stuff had to go into it because he is that important to what they do or what they did on defense, excuse me. But like even that, I think his deal is de-escalating, if I'm not mistaken. Oh. It's like that's...
It's now starting to hit me that you were not one of the people that thought I was crazy for liking the Dylan Brooks deal. So it's not the Brooks deal. I actually thought the Brooks deal was fine. Like I don't think it was team friendly by any means.
I don't know if they signed a team friendly contract. I think
yeah.
When you're the Rockets and you're looking to poach the talent that they were looking at, you are going to have to pay we just sucked for a few years premium. And I would argue the Van Vliet deal specifically is kind of team friendly because it's just for two guaranteed years. And it's like we go through next season, we go through next trade deadline to say they don't own their own pick, they don't control it, rather they decide they want to blow it up. Like all of a sudden Fred Van Vliet's an expiring contract next year teams can talk themselves into. And so I think I get what you're saying, where like when you're going even in, let's say, percentage of the cap, because we know the raw dollar amount gets weird with the way that the cap projections are going up. But it's just like, what else were they going to do with that money? Who were they going to get? What is the move they missed out on? And what is the investment that comes back to bite them? And I just don't.
I think Dylan Brooks has
the best chance of doing so, but I just don't see it.
I have that. It's the guy they passed on, James Harden. And I realize that's an unpopular opinion. I just think whatever James Harden's going to make for his max, right? Whatever. It's like it's $49 million. Mm-hmm. Van Vliet's getting 43. Right, like dollar for dollar, Harden's just objectively more worth his 49 than Van Vliet is of his 43. Right.
Would maybe call it an assumption or an educated guess would be that Harden would not have come back on a deal that just guaranteed him 2 years. And then you get into, would you rather have James Harden for 3 years and let's say 150 or Fred VanVleet for two at sub 90? And that's a real conversation because like any 3 or 4 year contract for Harden would have looked, the back end of that deal would have been absolutely terrifying.
It would have been terrifying, but I'm not sure if it would have been terrible. Like, nobody knows, right? Like, everybody just assumes that Harden's going to fall off this cliff, right? And like, he's going to be like
well, because they watch the playoffs. And that's where that assumption is born from.
Well, I also saw games 3 and games 5, right? Or games 1 and games 3, excuse me, right? Like he had high moments, right? It's the consistency that he no longer seems to have anymore. And that could be a byproduct of like, listen, he's getting older. That also could be like this guy just has not had like a fully healthy, you know, I don't want to get into the Harden conversation. My point is, I think like he would have driven winning for you in a way that VanVleet just is not capable of doing. That's not a knock on VanVleet. VanVleet is never supposed to be that guy, right? Like, mm-hmm. He's not a max player in the traditional sense. Harden is. Harden will get you, like, Harden could come into a team like Houston and push them up like 10 wins by his own, like just his existence alone. Like, he is still, whatever you think of the guy, he's still that good. Like, he led the league in assists last year, still an efficient scorer. And I think it would have been interesting at least to see that in Houston, as opposed to, you know right off the bat, you're getting 75 cents on the dollar with VanVleet, right? Like, that you just know that. You're paying a tax. Whereas with Harden, you're not paying a tax on the front end. You may be paying one on the back end, but we'll see. You're just kind of assuming that you're going to pay one.
Yeah, I can't get on board with it. I think it's just the inconsistency of the playoffs at this stage, and then the way, more the bigger thing to me, and we talked about this, is that he comes in and dictates just subconsciously, or inherently rather is the word, he dictates so much about how you have to play, to where he is a fantastic passer. I don't know how much he specifically would do for the development of a Jalen Green, a Jabari Smith Jr., an Alperen Şengün. I think at best, you know, I think the stuff with Jalen Green, I think would have been mega awkward functionally. And I think at best, he probably turns like Jabari Smith Jr. and even Şengün a little bit into more of these. And maybe even Amen Thompson, assuming Amen Thompson is still on this team in that iteration of Harden, he turns them more into play finishers than guys who are going to be featured and developed that way. And there's also just, okay, throw that out the window, the baggage or the implication of James Harden comes here. How many of these young guys that I just mentioned did you just trade because James Harden came here? And so, like, to go, it wasn't just about the money for Harden. It was all the baggage that came with him, whether it was, okay, well, does he actually nudge the development of most of our young guys in the right direction? If you want to make that case, fine. I think the bigger question then would even be, how many of those young guys are even still in Houston because of what it means when you go out and get a James Harden? We had that conversation. So there's more there. That investment didn't exist with VanVleet because you paid the premium purely in dollars. Harden would not have looked at the years or the money as a premium. That just would have been market value for him. And the premium would have been, well, look at how many of these young dudes we just traded to get who, you know.
So you think that he would have viewed that as market value after what we just saw this summer with him? Like, he opted into a $35 million year contract.
And he would not.
Go ahead.
I mean, look at how he's trying to play the trade demand right now. He was not going to Houston without some assurances that the roster would have been like blown up around him.
You made the point, like what is Harden doing for the development of these teammates, right? I don't think there's any player that can actually like help like the development of players, right? I just don't think that's how that works. I think that's more on the player and coaching staff. I think that's hard to put that on an external factor. I don't think there's anything VanVleet's doing, right? Like, I just think it's a matter of fit, where if you're going to make an argument for VanVleet being better, I actually am like receptive to the argument that VanVleet is a much better fit next to Jalen Green, next to Alperen Şengün. He does not force you to make a tough decision with some of the guys on your roster. I'm receptive to that argument. I don't know if I'm receptive to the argument that he would have hurt your culture. I just don't. I've never been like receptive to that argument.
I mean, I don't know how anyone could have hurt whatever culture the Rockets had in place before this season, but mm-hmm. It's more of a, do you streamline or complicate the long-term development of this team. And James Harden would have complicated it because of the decisions internally. How do we use player X now? Because James Harden is so heliocentric, and he has not really shown this past season in Philly. He shot some catch and shoot threes, but he's never really shown real evidence that he's going to be more of a secondary player. And would he have done that on a team where there are no proven primaries? And there's that baggage. And then there's the question of, well, we have James Harden, this guy who's heading into his age 34 season. We're paying him X for 3 or 4 years. What is the window move you're going to have to make to maximize his window? Fred VanVleet, because of the caliber of player that he is, doesn't force you into that situation. And he doesn't complicate the development even further because of his experience playing away from the ball. And he can cover up. You know, James Harden doesn't cover up for any of Jalen Green's weaknesses. Maybe his passing a little bit. But he's not going to help cover up for Jalen Green or Kevin Porter Jr. on the defensive end. And Fred VanVleet can absolutely do that.
We're getting into a different discussion, but I'm glad we did mention that because I hadn't talked to you all summer. And if I added in how I thought they performed on draft night, I would end up with an A-, right? I didn't get to finish my thought. That's why I thought of their offseason, of their free agency. I thought their offseason was probably an A-, because I thought they killed it with the Whitmore pick. I was screaming for them to trade up, starting at pick 10, and they got him at 20 without trading anything. And I think the Amen Thompson pick was the move I would have made. And obviously I'm biased, so I would have given that an A+ as well. So overall, I thought they killed it on draft night. And I thought, you know, these players that they brought in are going to help them on the floor. You know, they're going to make them better. We'll see how much better, right? We'll see how much these guys will take a step forward this year. But I think they're going to help. And I think Ime Udoka was, you know, a good hire. You know, I'm not sure if it was necessarily the hire I would have made. That doesn't matter. You know, I think the what matters is was it a hire that was going to help you move forward? And I think, yeah, it probably is. Is there a move that stood out for you for one reason or another? You could go positive or negative here.
I don't want to say positive or negative. It was more of a curiosity. Getting Jock Landale. I know you talked about kind of the value of having this rolling trade exception. If he works out, you have this team-controlled deal for 4 years. I'm wondering what it infers about their front court rotation and their level of faith in, are they really looking for an alternative if they don't think Şengün can close games, but they don't want to play Jabari at the five, or they don't want to try Jeff Green at the five? I might be just reading too much into that, but to bring in Jeff Green and Landale on top of having Şengün and Jabari Smith, it's curious. I don't think it's bad, but I also don't think it's necessarily good. And I'm just wondering if they've really loaded up on alternatives deliberately to say, hey, if someone like Şengün is not, let's say he's not defending well, or he's not doing what you want away from the ball offensively, is it to now sit there and be like, hey, we have these guys right here that we're going to play? Whereas you couldn't really do that last year. We saw Shangoon's role be repressed quite a bit at the start of the season, but the roster as previously constructed, you didn't have these alternatives to say, even look at Jalen Green now, where it's, hey, if he can't slow things down and try and organize the offense as a secondary, it's like, we've got Fred VanVleet over here that's going to go do that. And we have Amen Thompson here as well. So I'm very fascinated by this front court rotation and what type of looks we honestly see from it. And yeah, I think also just by having Amen Thompson and then Dylan Brooks and Tari Eason is still here, and there's Jayshon Tate there, and plus now Kevin Porter Jr. has been probably bounced down a rung or two in the rotation. There's just some fascinating perimeter decisions they need to make. And so in that regard, really leaning into perimeter players in free agency with investing in them heavily, Dylan Brooks, Fred VanVleet, when you already had X and X and X in here, that makes things very interesting as well. But it's the I know the Jock Landale signing is just like, well, what the hell is it's Jock Landale. But I can't shake the feeling that Landale might close games, or there's just going to be nights where he plays more than Şengün, because the Rockets seem clearly to have this vested interest in, we don't want to just make progress, but we want to be this night-to-night threat immediately. And I think some of the lineups they run out that have Şengün in them, and this isn't on Şengün specifically, but if you are invested in the development of certain other players a little bit more, I feel like the front court rotation, this is my long-winded way of saying that it's going to be this, maybe unpredictable mishmash, at least to start the year, maybe all year.
You know, you said, you know, maybe you're reading too much into the Lawndale and Green thing. I mean, I don't think you are. I think you're touching on exactly, like, part of the reason I gave them a C+, B- is, like, their pursuit of Brook Lopez. Because the process behind it, they gave up, I mean, you touched upon the asset management. Like, they gave up all those second rounders. They gave up on Garuba. They gave up on Christopher. They gave up on all those players, on Washington. They gave up on all those guys because they wanted to go get a 35-year-old defensive player of the year, right?
Right.
So they did that not because they had uber faith in Alper and Sengun, but the exact opposite. There seems to be an organizational, at least pause, with Sengun. And I thought that would go away when Steven Silas lost his job. It hasn't gone away, right? There seems to be a, I'm not sure if I want to put all my eggs in this basket, right? And that's why they went and got two backup centers in Jeff Green and Jock Landale, right? Like they have, you know, you mentioned Landale being someone that could possibly close games. I think Green could possibly close games because of how much Ime might value that switchability that Green brings on the defensive end of the floor and playing him at small ball center. I think that you know, that might be a look that they try to go to a lot. It worries me that's a look they might try to go to a lot. Not because I don't think those guys are good players. It's because I think Sengun finally deserves an opportunity to just get the keys. Just give this guy the keys. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But like, find out. Just find out. You know, like the all they've done is f***ed around. They haven't done the second part, right? And like, I just want them to do that this year. And that's kind of what, like, the process behind it. I was like, I can't believe they're still doing this. That was a part of like why I didn't like their free agency as much. But what's holding a lot of people back, including myself, from definitively saying like the Rockets have like one of the best young cores in the NBA, or like the best young core in the NBA, is that lack of a North Star, right? And what I mean by that, like, North Star is like the centerpiece for the organization. Like, nobody knows who that guy is going to be for the Rockets. Like, if you took a poll of like their top four prospects, I suspect Jalen Green has like the slight edge, but you're going to get Amen Thompson votes. You're going to get Alperen Sengun votes. You're going to get Jabari Smith votes. So if nobody knows who it's going to be, it means nobody has separated themselves from the pack. Victor Wembanyama will walk into the league as that guy in San Antonio. Scoot Henderson is going to be that guy in Portland. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has separated himself from the pack in Oklahoma City. Franz Wagner has separated himself from the pack in Orlando. Paolo might make it close. Paolo might make it close. And that's what we're going to debate today. Who will actually separate themselves from the pack in Houston? Because it's been kind of a fun off-season conversation I've seen among Rockets Twitter. And I want to touch upon that in a unique way. I've asked you, Dan, to make three lists. One is a general prospect ranking. Two is a highest ceilings ranking. And three is a little bit interesting. Most likely to be the best player on the Rockets ranking. So what that means is it incorporates the possibility that this player may not be on the Rockets. And it also incorporates the possibility that another player might be the best player on the Rockets, right? So that third list is it's just a fun kind of screw around kind of list, but there are some concepts I want to touch on that list. So Dan, let's begin with the general prospect ranking, because this is kind of the fun one. This is the one that everybody thinks about when they do these kinds of lists with the Rockets. Based on everything you've seen so far, give me your five best prospects on the Rockets. Not your five, excuse me. Give me your however many. I mean, are you going to rank Kevin Porter Jr. in this?
He's dead last for me. So, okay, fair enough. I did rank him.
Your seven best prospects then.
Yeah, so I have Jalen Green at number one still. I think, and I'll go through this quickly, but just the ability. I know he needs to slow things down, but like his command, given the speed at which he plays, is incredible. He shot like 38% on off the dribble threes after the All-Star break last year. He has that ability. We saw his efficiency inside the arc slip, but he gets to the rim at a good clip for a guy his size. He also gets to he improved his free throw frequency last year. He is a heartbeat away, I think, from being one of the more lethal and comprehensive offensive players in the NBA. And I think when you look at his usage versus what his turnover rate was last year, it was really incredible. And you kind of find yourself asking, can the efficiency tick up a little bit? And I think it will. He just played out year two as kind of the, you know, the central force of everything a bad team was doing that didn't really give him a ton of space. What does he look like as a playmaker? And is there like another gear or something to hit defensively? I honestly don't think there really is for him in the latter. But I think that he could become like a, you know, he does. These are not similar players, but when I think of like an analog playmaker, like a Chris Middleton type initiator, and that's going to require him again to slow down a bit. I have Jabari at two. I'm just smitten with Jabari now in ways, looking at some of the stuff he did to close the year and then his summer league. I'm just smitten with everything he could do. He's ready for grab and go stuff on offense. I think he looked a little bit more comfortable getting off above the break three pointers off the catch. That efficiency I would expect to come up this year. Some of the tough finishes that we saw from him in summer league with the ball in his hands, I don't know if you're going to give him that type of agency in the regular season with the talent you have around him, but the fact that it didn't feel like he was settling for those tough in-between jumpers as often when he had, in theory, the flexibility to, because he was a focal point in a way that he's not going to be with the real club because of Jalen Green, because of Fred VanVleet, even Amen Thompson. So that impressed me. And then there's just, he's going to be a fantastic defensive player. There's real malleability there. And even if you don't view him as dominant in any one area, you look at guys who are switchable, can give you like rim protection as a helper, go on and survive with smaller players. I think that there's a chance. I mean, there's not a chance. Like, he is probably their most complete prospect without question right now. Number three, I have this. Actually, stuff got tough for me here. I have Amen Thompson. I tend not to trust guys whose jumpers I really just don't believe in. He is that fast, though, on the ball. And I do think that he's eventually going to be a really frustrating on and off ball defender, and like even just sort of on ball, because of the way that he is like able to battle through screens and get in your face without getting beat. Will the consistency be there is a real question. At number four, I went with your guy, Alperen Şengün. He's just a filthy offensive player. And when I was making this list, I tried not to view it in the sense of, well, how do I think the Rockets are going to evaluate these players? I want to look at how I value them. And I have Şengün there. Some of the passes he throws are just obscene. He shot like 59% or 58% on paint touches last year. Outside of garbage time, he actually shot fairly well on above the break threes. I think he was at like 36%. I wonder if there's going to be more of a scoring continuity with him. Like, when he grabs rebounds, will he look to actually push more and more? Because he has that ability to do those things. Defense can certainly hold him back. I also don't think, when you look at a mobility standpoint, I don't think he's been some just like absolute disaster relative to what people think that he is. And so I don't know if he has like an average ceiling on that end. Like, I don't even think he has a Nikola Jokic level ceiling on defense, probably. Like, I don't think you want to bring him and play that far like up in terms of aggression. But like, I just don't, when you watch him, I don't think that he's like one of the worst defenders I've ever seen. I feel like he's painted as that a bunch. And then I guess this is kind of easy now, but I want the record to show I considered putting him at number three. I have Cam Whitmore here. The stuff he can do with the ball, man, and just like the really tough finishes and angles he can work when he gets inside the arc. I think that he is going to be a reasonable catch and shoot three-point guy in the NBA. Is that something he can do in higher volume because he's so used to operating on the ball? That's a real question. He has like a real defensive ceiling, though. Like, this is someone that you could throw on ball. Maybe you don't trust him to like be part of this huge team schematic, but at 6'6", like, he has the chance to be, no, I'm not going to say all defense, but you need to go and lock up the number two guy on this. Like, he has that ability. I have Tari Eason then here. Every team wants someone like Tari Eason, deflection king, someone who's isn't going to really monopolize any of your offensive usage, but he won't tie that offensive usage to how hard he's working on the defensive end. And then finally, I have Kevin Porter Jr., who I just think is, when I look at all the guys that we just went through, I view them all as players who will definitely be starting consistently for good teams in the league. I think that Kevin Porter Jr., and this is not an insult, I think people will take it as one, it's just wired to be, it can be on a great team, but that sixth or seventh guy that just comes in is not just a microwave scorer, but really injects some playmaking life, secondary playmaking life into your offense as well.
Right. So the way I went about my list is like, I valued production and age, like I factored those in like pretty heavily. So what you did, like if you played in the NBA, you're going to probably have an edge. And if you played well in the NBA, you're definitely going to have an edge. That's kind of the way it's just, I just value those. I've seen it, so I trust it. Assets, you know? So at number seven, I have Cam Whitmore. I think people will be surprised that I have him that low because I did rave about him and I was like super excited that he fell to Houston at 20. I was not like this crazy Cam guy. Like I liked Cam a lot, but like get past five, I'm like, yeah, give me Cam. Like, are you kidding me? Like, I can't, I just couldn't believe he fell that far. Like, the comparison I saw a lot that I thought was pretty fair, but a bit high for him to reach. Jaylen Brown, I kept seeing that a lot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if I would say he's going to ever reach that, but I thought that was like, oh, okay, that's like a reasonable, like, in terms of archetype and how he plays on the floor. Like, that's pretty reasonable. I don't think, like, he's like this crazy talented ball handler. He's a bit of a ball hog. He has blinders on, right? Like, you saw that at Villanova, continued through the summer league. I thought he made some more interesting passes than he did at Villanova, but it's summer league, so I'm not gonna give him like, you know, the craziest props for that. But he played well. I agree with what you said about him defensively. He could absolutely be a bulldog. I mean, the guy's just a freight train, and I can see him being that way on the other end of the ball. At number six, I had Tari Eason. So Tari Eason, high-end upside, I could see, like, I'm not saying I'm projecting this, I could see a case for him being like a Jeremy Grant one day, right? I'm not saying that's what he's going to become, but I can actually see that for him, actually being more talented offensively than what he's shown. Defensively, I think he's already positive. Like, he's already in the green. That's how good he is. He's got, like, the 7'2 wingspan, giant hands, just these mitts, and he's always getting his hands on balls. He's always in the passing lanes. He's always harassing offensive players, and I think he's going to be like an A-plus defender in the NBA. Could actually see him making like a second team all defense kind of guy. That's how high I think his upside is as a defender. KPJ I had at number five, just because I think he's a little bit underrated now from where we started with him. Like, I think the conversation's gone a little bit to the extreme. I think he's gotten his way to league average efficiency. He's a talented scorer. He is a decent passer. He's not a point guard. I think we kind of know that now. But give me him as a third guard in the playoffs. I would love that. And those guys are extremely valuable. I think he's going to have a long NBA career. I think he's going to be an efficient guy. I think he's going to be I'm not closing off the possibility that he could be a starter, because I'm not closing off the possibility that he could be a positive defender one day, actually. I'm not sure he's there yet, but he got himself to like close to average last year. Like, he was probably one of the best defenders on the Rockets last year. I'm not sure if that's saying much, but he was, right? I thought he had a pretty solid year last year, and I think this year is going to be really interesting to see how he performs for the Rockets, presumably off the bench. At number four, I have your guy Jabari. So he did ease some concerns at Summer League, right? He definitely worked on his ball handling, not only this summer, but last summer. I thought he was a better ball handler in the NBA than he showed at Auburn. And he improved upon that again. You could see that in Summer League. I'm not sure if I buy him as this on-the-ball guy. Like, you know, the comparison you saw a lot and always made me cringe was like, oh, this guy's going to be Paul George. It's like, yeah, maybe like if everything goes right. Right. And at the same time, I recognize that Paul George is one of those guys where everything went right. Right. Like, he was a development story for the ages, right? Was not this highly touted prospect, but legitimately worked on his game to the point where he is like, what is he, like an 8-time All-Star, career All-Star? Like, he's tremendous, right? Paul George is awesome. One of the more valuable players in the NBA at age 33. I definitely think that is a high ceiling for Jabari, but it's not at the realm of possibility. I think it's like a 1% outcome, though. I think more realistically, I see like a LaMarcus Aldridge kind of ceiling, right? Like, I kind of think that's kind of where he's going to end up. I don't see him starting possession with the ball in his hands, but I could see him getting the ball in the post and operating from there, shooting over the top of guys, and probably spacing the floor to three at a decent clip. I'm not sure if I see that same 40 to 42% clip that a lot of people projected coming out of college, including myself. I think I'm probably, you know, less inclined to say he's going to become that, but can I see him becoming a 37, 38, 30, maybe 39 guy? Yeah, I could see that. I think he's going to be a productive player. Number three, I have Amen Thompson. Amen Thompson, the poise he showed in those 25 minutes at Summer League was impressive to me. Like he was like, that was a high stakes game. There was a lot of attention on it because the Victor Wembanyama game was next, and that was the Scoot, that was the game that Scoot Henderson made his debut, and he came to play. Like he was not rattled. He was just letting the game come to him, and I liked what he did in half court settings, which I was worried about because watching him at the G League Ignite, I mean not the G League Ignite, excuse me, the Overtime Elite, like everything was transition. Like that was a strange league for me to watch, and watching him in the in a somewhat closer to NBA setting at the Summer League level in half court situations, it's like, okay, this guy is not gonna, like, he has something to go, he has stuff to go to, like he can get to the rim at will. That fast twitch athleticism, it's there. He can contort his body at the rim when he gets there. He's strong, he's mobile defensively, and I think he's gonna be like a pretty good like two-way player. I think I think he's going to be a starting point guard in the NBA. I recognize like that is projecting him to get to like league average shooting. It's a high bar, right, for him to clear. He's at 30% right now at the Overtime Elite. I think that's what he shot. I think he can get there. I think he can get, or at least slightly below that, like 34%. I think that's manageable. Is that where Jaw's at? I think Jaw's at 34%.
He can get, that even seems high.
Yeah. For Jaw. Yeah, I think he can get to 34%, right? Like that. I think that with some work, and I'm actually more optimistic he can get there now that he's playing off the ball behind Fred VanVleet, behind Jalen Green, behind KPJ. He's going to have to work on his off the ball stuff to actually be a positive player in Ime Udoka's rotation and consistently get playing time. So the fact that he's forced to have to go earn those minutes makes me more optimistic about how he's going to develop as an off the ball player, particularly as a shooter. Jalen Green at number two. There's a lot of people selling. I know what that means. So there's a lot of people selling Jalen Green stock. And I'm just going to say right now, if you're selling, I'm buying. Please send me a message on Twitter. Like tweet at me. Get in contact with me. Say, my email is in my bio. If you're selling some stock, I'm ready to buy. Because like, you know, like I was a Mobley guy during the draft, but this guy is a freak athlete. He has one of the quickest first steps I've ever seen. He legitimately, his first year, he was getting past like Drew Holiday and just didn't know what the hell to do when he got past Drew Holiday, but he was getting past Drew Holiday, which is like no easy feat. I believe in the shooting. I think he can become a good NBA shooter. He is crafty with the ball in his hands. He is shifty as hell. As a defender, that's the area of his game that needs the most work. Right, like he is really, really bad as a defensive player right now. Like I'm talking like probably the worst player on the Rockets starting lineup right now. As he is really, really bad as a defender. But I think Ime Udoka coming in is going to be something that's helpful for him defensively. I think that being emphasized is going to help aid in his development. And I think there's a possibility he gets to a point where he's just slightly below league average, right? And still enough of a positive on offense, like where if he ever gets to the point where he's leading the league in scoring, it doesn't matter if he's slightly below the average on defense, right? I don't know if he's ever going to get to that point, but I think he can get to where Devin Booker was, right? Like that's kind of where I see for him as like a ceiling in the NBA. I kind of see Devin Booker, if he wants to become the best possible player or the best possible version of himself, that's who he should model himself after. The playmaking is a work in progress. He has better feel than I anticipated. Definitely better than where he was at with the Ignite and in high school, frankly. He has worked on that every single year. I think getting to the free throw line was something that was encouraging for me to see him do last year. Like he was, his rookie year, he really only had good games when he shot the ball well. And his sophomore year, he finally managed to be like a 5 free throw a game guy in the NBA, which is like encouraging. I think if he can get to the point where he's 6-7 a game, you know, 80% from the line, 36% from three, you know, 45% from the free throw from the field, that's a really, really good, you know, interesting player to build around. I think he's complementary to a lot of offensive structures, which would make, you know, me more likely to buy into him long term on any team. I just think he's really, really talented. I don't know why people are like, I guess when you compare him to like his other, like the other players in his draft, like, yeah, some of the guys in his draft are doing better than him. That doesn't mean that he's doing bad, that he's on a poor track. Like, I think he's 21 years old and he's heading into, like, Michael Jordan was 21 years old when he entered the NBA. It's a point of example, right? Like, that's how young he is, right? So I think I want to see what he does in his third year. I think he's going to become more efficient. I think he's going to become better at shooting. And I think defensively, if he's built out his body, I think he can get to the point where he's at least not a complete embarrassment next season, right? He's probably going to be bad. I don't know if he's going to be as bad as he was last year. Last year, he was really, really bad. And number one, Alperen Şengün, baby. I can't deny this anymore to myself. I just think, minute for minute, possession for possession, he's just been the best player on the Rockets over the last 2 years. The best young player, excuse me. I think if you isolate the possessions with the ball in their hands for all these guys, Şengün's just done better than these guys, right? Projecting forward, we are giving these other guys more credit when we put them above Şengün. And I don't think that's fair. Şengün is really young. He's 20 years old. He's already one of the best big men passers in the NBA right now. I think he is going to get to the point where he's averaging 20 points per game. I think that's a, whether that's on the Rockets or somewhere else, I think he's going to get there. And if you're telling me he can become Sabonis, if you're telling me there's a world in which he becomes Jokic, I don't know if I buy that, but I think that world does exist. Like, yeah, he deserves the number one spot, right? Like, just off the fact that that's a 1% outcome for him, right? If I'm saying Jalen Green's, like, top percentile outcome is, like, Devin Booker, if I'm saying, like, Jabari Smith's top percent outcome is, like, Paul George, Jokic is better than all those dudes, right? And I'm not even saying that's what I think he's going to become. I think he's going to become Sabonis, right? I think that's, like, his more realistic, like, what he's actually going to become, what I would bank on him becoming. And Sabonis is a freak, man. All NBA player last year, probably undervalued and misused in Indiana, and great to see him thriving in Sacramento. If he can get to that point with the Rockets or some other team, I'm thrilled by getting him at 16th in the draft.
Yeah, I guess when I do prospect rankings, I don't take into consideration but the immediate value is part of it. But like, I'm still going to project forward, where it's like, these are more predictive for me than saying, yeah, okay, Şengün probably been the most impactful pro. Maybe. I still think Jalen Green has a case there. But that's why I also don't think we see a lot of offenses run the way that Şengün will need them to be run to reach his absolute apex, which is what I think deters, is a deterrent for me.
Yeah, I just don't think it has to happen on the Rockets, right? Like, if I'm just ranking, like, this is not my most likely to be the best player on the Rockets, like, you know, list, right? Where he is lower on that list. This is my, like, best prospect list, right? Where it's like, I'm taking a look at, like, each player's most realistic outcome, right? And I think his most realistic outcome, based on what he's produced up until this point and how young he is, and how efficient he already is, how impactful he already is with the ball in his hands, how great of a passer he already is. That's why I'm willing to project forward with this. I think, you know, you mentioned how a lot of NBA offenses don't run with this. I guess, you know, like, you know, a lot of people view it that way, right? Like, it's like, we don't run offenses through centers that often, right? Like, it's there's like two teams that do that. Three, I guess you could say, right? And if you're saying that Şengün is going to be someone that forces a team to run their offense through him, I think, yeah, I that's kind of what I am saying. I'm not saying that has to be the Rockets. I'm saying if it's not the Rockets, it's eventually going to be somebody else. Whether it's at 22 years old, whether that's at 25 years old, he is going to force some team to make them their centerpiece. Some smart team is going to scoop him up and run their offense through them and through him and see and benefit from that. And I can't wait for that to actually happen. I hope that happens to the Rockets. But I suspect it's not. So that is kind of why he is not number one on my most likely to be the best player on the Rockets list. I just think here, as of right now, if I'm being fair about what these guys have done before they were NBA players and after they were NBA players, if I'm weighing them both, right? Şengün, I think, just has the most he just has the best production and the best, the most positive impact. I believe he's the only positive impact player, if you look at all the advanced metrics, among Jabari, Shengu. Jabari, I think, has a slightly positive net rating last time I checked, but I think Şengün and Tari are the only two guys with like really, really high positive ratings in terms of impact metrics. So that's kind of why I made this decision. I know that's controversial, but I just believe in the guy. I've always believed in the guy. I'm not going to back away. I want to lean in, and that's what I'm doing today.
I guess there could be some sort of Sabonis turn where it was like Indy had the revelation of, oh, we're going to run our offense through him. I just think there are then limitations even of that player unless you are Jokic. Like, because the gap between a Sabonis and a Jokic is just so huge that it wouldn't shock me if even scaling off the Rockets that a team does not look at Şengün and say, oh, he's someone who we need to flesh out our entire offense around. Maybe it's more so he'll really run second units, and that's how we'll kind of, like, it just feels like that's going to be the most likely outcome for him, but just maybe I don't have the vision of what an NBA offense or how much he's going to elevate those around him. Maybe they haven't had the personnel that he's capable of elevating around him just yet. So I just can't, that outcome is tough for me to envision.
I mean, if you look at like all these advanced metrics, he seems to be making the Rockets better when he hits the floor, right? Like, and you know, I think he definitely had a positive impact on KJ Martin, right? And I think he's definitely played really, really well with both Jalen Green and I would say Tari Eason. He's had some really interesting minutes with, and I'd like to see more of next season. But like, I think there are players where I'm like, yeah, he's made them better. I'm disappointed. I'll say this. I'm disappointed in how he's fit with Jabari. I thought that was going to be a match made in heaven. And I'm actually a bit frustrated that in both of them, that they aren't working, that they haven't made this work. Like, if you're talking about the best possible players to play next to these guys, they should look at each other and be like, oh, of course we're supposed to be like peanut butter and jelly. Why isn't that happening? And I'd like to see, like, just why is Jabari yelling at this dude about defensive assignments? Like Jabari, you're not there. You're not at that point yet as a defender. Like, you don't get the right to yell at this dude, right? About missed rotations. Like, I want them to get their shit together and actually like give it a fair shake next year. So I want to see how that looks. But yeah, those are my prospect rankings. Besides Şengün, did you have any comments on where I placed these guys?
Let me run back. What was the order again?
Thompson. Oh no, excuse me. That's a different list. Şengün, Green, Thompson, Jabari, KPJ, Tari, Cam.
Yeah, I guess Cam Whitmore being so low is kind of interesting, but you made, I mean, like, we both pointed out what his flaws are going to be, and so it's like a very, I guess, I don't view him as high risk because you got him at 20, but there's the risk-reward profile with playing him is certainly there. So no, Şengün just seems like really high to me, especially even if you're not a Green guy, to have him over Amen and Jabbar, like, just one over those four guys is pretty, again, currently, if you want to say he's the best player on the Rockets, I still think it's Jalen Green. I know what the impact metrics say, but like when you watch the games, it feels like Green has more of a material offensive impact on like the way defenses can bend. But I can't argue against like the passes that Şengün is able to throw, the way that he can get guys moving off the ball in an offense that felt like they wanted for that a lot of the time when he didn't have it. So as of right now, if you want to say he was their best player, like I'm probably not going to put up much of a fight against that. But scaling forward, I was pretty surprised you put him number one.
Well, it's not just that he was their best player, right? Like, it's like the fact that he was the best player at his age, right? And that's why I'm able to project, right? It's like if this was like a 24-year-old rookie that came in and put up the numbers he did, like obviously he's not going to be number one on my list. This is like an 18-year-old that came in and put up the numbers that he did, right? And it's like, mm-hmm. like that's why I feel confident projecting forward. But listen, I get it. I'm on an island here. Well, I'm on less of an island than I was before. More people have joined the island. They're not all the way, you know, at this point. But I don't care. I don't care about what other people think. That's where I'm at.
You have, I don't even know if what you have is an island. It's like a sandbar, because there's a difference between like Şengün's going to be really good, which I feel like most people have come around on, and Şengün is going to be cornerstone best player on the team material. So hey, you're on like your own little sandbox.
I didn't say best player on the team. That's a separate list.
No, not this. You're saying he's corner. If you're cornerstone material, your outcome, and you if you want a team to build their entire offense around him,
yeah,
he needs to be the best player on that team. Or the Rockets or elsewhere. Otherwise, it doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, or one of the cornerstones for your offense. Like I'm again the issue. You know, we started this conversation talking about the North Star with the Rockets, right? I'm not sure there's a North Star, right? So like. Me saying this about Şengün is like just me saying that I think he's one of your cornerstone can be a one of your cornerstones for your offense. Maybe he doesn't have to be the guy, but can he be the second guy? Yeah, I'm fairly confident at that point, right? Like I'm fairly confident that Sabonis can be your second best offensive player on a championship team. I'm fairly confident in that. I'm not sure if the Kings are necessarily the team, you know, but I think there is a team now. Now that I've seen what he's been able to do in Sacramento, I'm confident in saying there is a team where he can be the second best offensive player for you. But you want to move on?
Yes.
Okay. High ceiling. Okay. Can I hear your list first?
Yeah. So ceiling, I have number 7 is Tari Eason, which is just like he seems a quintessential glue guy. I don't know if he'll ever expand his offensive portfolio enough to have a higher ceiling than anyone on this list. I have Kevin Porter Jr. after him. Just I very much value what you can do as an on-ball offensive player. And Kevin Porter Jr. has also sneakily turned himself into like one of the best like catch-and-shoot guys in the NBA as well. I have – this is just due to like kind of a – I'm wondering – I have Alperen Şengün here. I just – when you're looking at his ceiling, it feels like – no – this is going to be a highly impactful player, but I do think that he's going to cause some problems. Where is he going to be one of those players who, yeah, they're really good, and they're different players. I want to make that clear, but it's the Pelicans deciding because we have players who are better on our team. Like, can Jonas Valanciunas really close games because he's not providing us what we need in those minutes? Okay. And so if you want that from Şengün in his best possible outcome, you're going to need to have a lot of just like strong perimeter defenders around him, a lot of shooting, good off-ball movers, and it feels like it's when we're talking about ceilings, it feels like the specifications on fleshing out a roster around him would be very particular. I have Cam Whitmore after him. It's the mysteriousness of him to me. I get it, the tunnel vision. What is he going to look like as a three-point shooter in the NBA? I'm just recycling the stuff we both talked about in the last segment. But you can't teach like his scoring arsenal a lot of time when he gets going downhill. And I think, you know, I thought a lot about between him and Şengün. And even when we were going through the overall prospect rankings, because, okay, what do the medicals actually look like that caused him to drop? I know some people said that he interviewed poorly, but I need to know what you could possibly say in an NBA interview that causes you to drop like 14 spots. So
I need to know the teams. Like we now know at least one team passed on him because of a poor interview. I need to know who. I really need to know. Because
was he like saying that he sells like children or something? Like, I just don't. What could he possibly say that would make you tank?
What's surprising is I think it's what he didn't say. It's the fact that he's this quiet kid that seemed to like, or like this introvert, right? Like that seemed to hold like, oh, this guy's not this bubbly personality like the Thompson twins are, for example. Like really? Like that's holding you back? Like you factor that in to your basketball analysis? Like I that's why I need to know. Your name, you know, I need
it
to.
It feels
know.
Like there's also a player like that every year where it's Andrew Wiggins hated basketball, Anthony Edwards hated basketball. Maybe not every year, but every a high profile prospect just doesn't interview well. So maybe he was that guy.
Yeah.
The medicals, I'd be curious to see like what those said. So him and Şengün, I almost view as interchangeable because I think they are both, there's real limitations in both their games where it's, I need to see the vision of Cam Whitmore's. What does the, like, is his ceiling as a passer what we saw from Jordan Clarkson this past season where, it was great to see him improve like that, but that's also not going to drive an offense as a number one or maybe even a number two option. So him and Şengün might be tied or interchangeable. After that, this was really tricky for me. I went with Amen Thompson here. It's the shooting for me. It's like I said, I'm very curious to see how he projects a couple years from now. What does he look like as an NBA shooter? I think he has all the other tools that you're going to need, but if you're that guy, and you just still like think about, and these are two different players, but like think about really good NBA players who operated from the perimeter with the ball in their hands, who just weren't great shooters, but they were great at a lot of other things where it's like, Amen Thompson will be a better scorer than Ben Simmons, but like there was always that very strict limitation on his game. Giannis Antetokounmpo right now, he's added a package where he has counters, but like he's still not efficient from the perimeter. He's become the best player in the NBA anyway, but does Amen Thompson have MVP DPOY in the same season ceiling? It's just, it's really tough to get there. If you told me that he shot, became like a 36, 35% three-point shooter, I might slingshot him up to the top of this list. I have Jalen Green at number two. I think that he might be the player most likely to hit his ceiling of this group, where it's just like, you know, you mentioned a Devin Booker. Is it more of just like a, you know, I would call it like a knuckleball Zach LaVine a little bit. Like, could he be someone like that? For sure. And I think it might even be likely he reaches that level of player to where, oh, like Devin Booker's super high end, but like think of the Zach LaVine type or Bradley Beal type. Again, different players, but it's, could they be in the all NBA discussion in any given season? Sure. Would you predict them to make four? Probably not. And then in these projections, I do value completeness. And that's why I have Jabari number one. And I do that recognizing, okay, he's probably never going to be the number one option on an offensive team, but you don't necessarily need to be the best player on your team. And it's like, we kind of like, you don't need him to have this Joel Embiid type of offensive arc. If he's going to be someone who can cover so much ground for you on the defensive end, where it's not just handling the one-on-one situations or helping, where it's directing his teammates and maybe not screaming at them, as you mentioned with Şengün already. And then you're also your plug and play on offense, but you have the package to where, oh, if you need the bailout and we want him to face up and he needs to turn around from mid range, or even I saw him dribble into a couple threes. And so if he's going to be able to do that, then of course, maybe follow through more on his drives. There's just so many different areas in which I feel like he can impact the game that it probably, to me, outstrips the areas in which I think Amen Thompson, even throw Cam Whitmore, Şengün, and Jalen Green, they all have like that dominant skill that I'm not sure that Jabari Smith Jr. has. But the fact that he might, like his 100th percentile outcome might be the 80th percentile of rim protector, switchable defender, shooter, play finisher, just like all those things where he could finish in the 80th percentile of so many different areas. I don't think there's anyone else on this roster, unless you disagree, that would come close to hitting that. Maybe, again, if you believe in Amen Thompson shooting, it could be him. But so that's why I have him number one. Maybe I'm just also sipping like the very small sample summer league juice.
So with these rankings, I feel like you're allowed to factor in outlier player development, because to hit your ceiling, you have to kind of, to at least to some extent, have some outlier player development. Most people don't hit their ceilings in the NBA, right? They hit 75 percentile outcomes, 50 percentile outcomes. They don't hit, you know, 100%, 99 percentile outcomes, right? Like, so if we're allowed to entertain that, that I think you can get crazy here. So for number one, I have Amen Thompson. And the reason I have Amen Thompson is he is the only Rocket I can realistically see being an elite scorer, an elite playmaker, and an elite defender, right? He's the only guy who can check all three of those boxes at the highest percentile outcome, right? I don't think any of these guys can do that. I think some of these guys can check two of those boxes. I don't know if anybody can be like the guy, right? Your heliocentric guy that's also amazing defensively. If there's going to be a guy, I think it's Amen. Number two, I think it's Şengün, because we mentioned the Jokic outcome, you know, where he is the heliocentric guy, but in a different way, and he is not the linchpin for your defense. Like, you have to kind of compensate for him defensively, but he hits such a high level. This is like assuming he hits every single, you know, he gets everything right on the defensive end, and he continues to develop as an offensive player. That is like the highest percentile outcome. Again, with all these guys, not saying they're going to get there, but that's why I have him number two. Jabari Smith, I could see a scenario, right? Like we talked about the Paul George, that's like the high end, right? If he experiences outlier player development, I'm just not so confident that he's going to get there as a ball handler, considering where he started from, and where he was as a creator in general, considering where he started from. Like, just the craft in scoring that you need to get to a Paul George is high, right? and it's gonna take a ton of work. It's gonna take like a lot of things working out for you, not only as a personal player, just like team context, right? Like, think players kind of have to fade away, right? Like Danny Granger kind of faded away from the Pacers, right? And it allowed Paul George to step into that role and, you know, take over that usage and become the player that he became. You kind of have to, if you're Jabari, you kind of have to have multiple of these guys fade away. And that's kind of why I'm not as confident, but I do think that that possibility exists, so I have a number three. Jalen Green, again, like, highest possible ceiling I see is Devin Booker, right? Like, that's the highest possible ceiling. More realistic outcome is like a, probably, as you said, Zach LaVine, maybe a Bradley Beal. But the high end I see is Devin Booker. And Devin Booker is good. Like, he is an elite scorer, not an elite playmaker. Got to a point where he was a good playmaker. But not the guy you can just give the ball, like, you can just be a heliocentric team with, right? You kind of have to, you know, bring in a lot of guys to make the team work. But that doesn't mean that Devin Booker can't eventually one day be like the best player on a championship team, right? Like, I think that there's a limited range of outcomes where that's possible with Devin Booker. But there are some teams, right, where if you get everything right, he becomes that guy. Number five, I have Cam Whitmore, and I struggled with actually Jalen and Cam, because it's like, if I think that Cam's highest percentile outcome is Jaylen Brown, and I think Jaylen's highest percentile outcome is Devin Booker, well, like, who is more valuable to a championship context, Jaylen Brown or Devin Booker? And I ultimately settled on probably Booker, because he provides that much more offensively and that much more with the ball in his hands. And I just think, in general, like, offense is more valuable than defense. So I think that's where I went there. Number six and seven, I'm kind of with you. I have KPJ Tari. So KPJ, I mean, listen, he's good. I think you and I both agree. He's just a good player. He's going to have a long NBA career. I'm just skeptical on, like, whether or not he'll reach all NBA level outcomes. And, you know, when you get to six and seven on this list, you're probably not going to reach those outcomes. And that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I don't think he's ever going to reach that. I don't think he's going to reach all-star outcomes. But I think there are, you know, in terms of highest possible ceilings, I think there is a scenario where he's a starter. You know, there's a scenario where he's like your fourth best player on a championship team, which is very good, and that's deserving of this kind of spot on the list. Tari Eason, listen, I debated on whether or not I should put him higher on this list, because if everything works out for him, I guess you could squint and see a version of like a high level creator from the wing position, but I just have not seen enough to squint and see that yet. Other people have. That's great. I'm not saying they're wrong in thinking that. I just think I see more value in him defensively as of right now than offensively. And that's fine. Like, again, if he's like the fourth best starter on a championship team, that's a very positive player. And, you know, perhaps, you know, you could debate on KPJ and Tari. I think going back on it, I think I'd probably put Tari above KPJ. Not a knock on KPJ, I just think that Tari is more likely to be a starter than KPJ is, and that's kind of where I end up on this list. Any disagreements with me on that list?
No, I think the top specifically, it feels like there's a lot of interchangeability, because we're talking about the ceilings rather than the most realistic outcomes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's get to those most realistic outcomes. The player most likely to be the best player on the Rockets, right? And this factors in whether or not they're going to be on the Rockets. This factors in whether or not the Rockets go out and acquire somebody else, so we were allowed to venture off from the Rockets roster. And for number one on this list, I put Jalen Green. And the reason I put Jalen Green there is because he was always just a... I always just felt like he was a safe bet to become an All-Star one day, right? Like, even in the 2021 draft, I felt like he was the safest of the top guys to become an All-Star one day. That was even above Mobley, even though I thought Mobley's ceiling was higher. I just thought, this guy always wins. He always succeeds. This kind of guy always succeeds in the NBA. He always manages to be a positive offensive player. And the Rockets are investing a lot into him, right? The Rockets really want him to pan out. And he is a very hard worker, which is why I think there is a high probability that he will be the best player on the Rockets one day, right? I think because the Rockets want that to happen, because they're going to do everything that possible for it to happen, because he's already as advanced as he is athletically, and because he works unbelievably hard, that you hear a lot of great human intel about Jalen Green, I think that's going to bode well for him. That's why I have him number one. Number two, I have Amen Thompson. A lot of the same things, human intel wise. I think those are reasons why you think he can become a better shooter one day. Those are reasons why I think offensively he can be kind of your engine, while Jalen Green is kind of your secondary creator, which I kind of see as like a really, really nice outcome for you if you're the Rockets. But even if he's not your primary guy, I think he's going to be a very nice guy to play off Jalen Green. Just a nice complement of skill sets in terms of what each player is lacking and what the other guy makes up for. I think Amen has a really, really high ceiling in the NBA, and I think he's, because of his work ethic, I think he's pretty probable to work out. Alperen Şengün, I'm scared. I'm very scared that he will never get the opportunity to be the best player on the Rockets, which is why I have him third and not number one on this list. I don't think the Rockets are going to invest the most in him. I don't think he's going to get the opportunities here. I think he might get traded before he ever gets the opportunities here. And that's kind of why he's number three. It has nothing to do with my belief in him as a player. As you guys can tell from this podcast, I very much believe in him as a player. I'm not sure if I necessarily believe in him as a Rocket. And that's kind of why I have him third on this list. Number four, I have Superstar X. So that could be Zion, Luka, LaMelo, whatever star player cobbles his way out that's in his early 20s right now, mid-20s, whatever. The Rockets, maybe this is the guy that the Rockets trade Şengün for. I don't know. Like, I just think I would say at this point in the list, this is a more likely outcome to be the best player on your team than the guys I have below this player. So the guys I have below this player is Jabari. I like Jabari. I just don't see that high-level outcome panning out for him. Right? I just don't. Like, I think he's more likely to be the third best player on a championship team, which is a very good player, than he is your second best guy. And I don't see a scenario where he's ever going to be your first best guy. That's why I have him fifth on this list, and that's why I don't think he's likely to be the best player on the Rockets. Tari Eason, listen, if everything works out for him, I think he can be a very, very strong complementary piece to the Rockets. Sorry, I just activated Siri. Hold on. Okay. Sorry about that. All right.
You're good.
I think he's going to be a very, very strong complementary piece for the Rockets. Again, below Superstar X, I don't think any of these guys have a chance to be the best player on the team. So I'm just kind of ranking most probable NBA outcomes. And I think Tari Eason has like the third to last, I guess, best, outcome. Most likely outcome for the Rockets. After that, I have Cam Whitmore. This is not Cam Whitmore and KPJ. I kind of want to group here because it's not necessarily an indictment on their talent. I just think these are the two most likely to not be on the Rockets. I think if the Rockets ever make a big trade, KPJ is the most likely to be traded. Cam Whitmore is right behind him, right? I think those are the most expendable assets on the Rockets on the roster. I think the Rockets can afford. If it sounds weird to say that, I think the Rockets can. Out of all these guys, I think the Rockets can afford to lose these two assets if they're trading for a star out of anybody on the roster. So, if I were to bet, I just it's not that I think Tari has higher end outcome than Cam Whitmore. It's just I think Cam Whitmore is not going to be on the Rockets, or I think Tari is more likely to be on the Rockets than Cam and KPJ. And that's kind of why I have these guys on their respective lists, on their respective places on this list. How was your list?
So we were pretty similar at the top. I had Jalen Green followed by Amen Thompson and then Superstar X penciled in. I didn't put it as that, but I just have names listed like Pascal Siakam, Mikal Bridges, Joel Embiid, Zion Williamson, et cetera, et cetera. And I have Jabari right after that. And then I have Şengün is right below him, followed by Whitmore, KPJ, and then Eason. The reason I have it situated that way is basically everything you laid out, but I would personally have Jabari Smith higher if I didn't think that should the Rockets make this big superstar move, it just very much feels to me like it's going to be someone that materially impacts how the front court operates. Yeah. And so it would be the same reason why, in theory, Şengün isn't higher, even though I don't know that I would have him higher. It's not just that, okay, one of those or both those guys will be involved in that trade. I'm with you where with KPJ with his salary and then Cam Whitmore, kind of as if this happens the next year or two, it's he still has that mystery box shine of if he's healthy, oh, it's he could be anything. Like, look at this swing we're taking. But with like Jabari specifically, yeah, okay, he might go out because of the value that you need to put in, depending on what, you know, if it's Zion Williamson, like Jabari Smith Jr. is probably in that trade, I would guess. But it's also just, well, if Zion comes in, or if Joel Embiid comes in, because I think that the Rockets would be very much involved in those guys if they became widely available, let's say, if they weren't requesting to go to one place. And that is going to, that's not really going to change. Yeah, it might change the touches for Jalen Green and Amen Thompson, but those are two guys that you're probably, the whole reason you're acquiring Superstar X at this moment is to play with those guys. And I don't think Jabari falls into that tier, again, specifically because the person who comes in might just be a 4 or 5. That would be my guess of who they sort of target. Now, does that change if they decide to go after, you know, what's the next superstar wing that becomes available? Is it Luka Doncic? That might change everything a little bit. Paul George and Kawhi both feel a little old, and then with their upcoming free agencies as of now anyway, they are extension eligible. So the fact that I think, and I just don't think it's going to happen at point guard, it almost feels like when we're looking at Amen Thompson's value specifically, like Fred VanVleet is kind of set up to be the chaperone into the era of, okay, Amen Thompson is running a lot of this team on offense. And so I think that that's why the superstar is just kind of third, most likely, is almost by default, because I think that that superstar, that star that they get, is going to wind up either costing like one of their bigs in Jabari or Şengün, or is just going to appreciably warp how those two are used.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like I had Şengün like just right, like it's interesting how we both viewed the superstar X as kind of like the border, right? Like if you're below this line, we probably don't believe in you as much as like the best player on the Rockets one day, right? We more believe in that superstar X being that guy versus you. And Şengün was kind of like, yeah, I kind of think he makes the edge because I think he is talented enough to be above superstar X, but I don't think he's talented enough to be way up there, like number one or number two, like safe from being, you know, right there with superstar X. And you know, here's a prediction. I suspect that the Rockets are only going to end their rebuild with two of Şengün, Jabari, and Tari Eason. I think one of those guys is likely going to be gone, right, via trade, via restricted free agency, whatever. I think I just see, like, okay, there are scenarios where Şengün is the future center for this team. But I think there's also scenarios where if Shengun's not here, I could see the front court very much being Tari and Jabari, right? Mm-hmm. And just leaning into, we're packing this team with as much defenders as we possibly can and, you know, insulating Jalen Green. And we're going to do that. And still space the floor, and we're going to put in Cam Whitmore at the three or whatever at some point in the future, right? And have Dylan Brooks as like our bench wing, whatever, right? Like I think that's kind of the more realistic outcome. I just don't see a scenario where I'll put it this way: these three guys, in my opinion, Şengün, Jabari, and Tari, are starters. I think they're starting level players in the NBA. That's kind of why I think they're probably, one of them is probably going to be overqualified to come off the bench. And I think the Rockets would be prudent in getting ahead of that and perhaps trading these guys at the high point in their value. I don't think either of these guys have hit the high point in their values, but whenever they do, whenever we're close to that point, I think it might be prudent to trade these guys kind of in the night and maximize on the value. Whether that's for a star player or for more assets that you can eventually flip for a star player, I would look at that if I'm the Rockets. And these next couple years are going to be very, very important for evaluation in terms, not only Alperen Şengün, but Jabari Smith, right? I kind of think you're basically picking between the two there. Like, I think, you know, I don't think it's likely that Şengün is like, I don't think it's, I think it's more likely that Tari is the complementary piece to one of these guys, right? Like he is so easy to slide in as a complementary piece. And Sengun and Jabari are the only guys here with like star upside, right? So I kind of think when you're projecting out the Rockets, that front court rotation is going to be very, very interesting because I think it's really going to be a battle. And maybe Tari surprises us and he's the guy you have to keep, right? As of right now, I don't think you and I are at that point, but I think as of right now, the biggest disagreements, not only on Rockets Twitter, but like draft Twitter / NBA Twitter, seem to be around these two guys, Jabari and Sengun. What is their ceiling? Who has a higher ceiling? Who is more likely to reach their ceiling? And I think whoever wins that argument on the court will get to stay on the Rockets. And whoever loses, and not necessarily loses, whoever, you know, gets the other side of that argument, is probably going to be shipped out for a whatever.
Yeah, I think I'd probably, that's a good way to frame it. It does bring the interesting discussion of how likely are they to like make the trade for a star at some point. Mm-hmm. Like for sort of forget about the package because it's, you know, again, there could be, look at our top four or five. Maybe there's interchangeability there where any of those two guys could be thrown out in the trade, but will they make that trade? And I think with this organization specifically, kind of at least what they intimated this offseason, if we fast forward 3 years, and this gets further into the discussion of you're saying X amount of players will only be a part of this rebuild, I think the more fascinating question is how many of Jabari, Sengun, Amen Thompson, and Jalen Green are part of the next iteration of the Rockets. And if I set the over-under at 2.5, do you take the over or the under on that? And I think I might go with the under, not a reflection of how much I like any of those guys. I think, look, I'm lower on Sengun than you, and I think this is going to come off as like a, you had a guest on that had the Sengun hit piece.
No.
I think he's really good. It's just you're higher on him than consensus, which I think Devin Vassell is going to be like an All-NBA player, and I know not a lot of people feel that way about him. And that's where it feels like you're at with Sengun. Yeah. But like, you have to give up something to get something, and I might take the under there, but I do recognize that like, okay, between those incoming Brooklyn picks, like Houston does have some real flexibility to where could they make offers that are so pick heavy it only cost them one of those dudes. But as of right now, I think in part because I just don't know the plan of with Sengun just yet. If you told me, again, set the over under on those four guys, 2.5 of them being on this team when it's good, ready to compete, or if you even want to say like 3 years from now or whatever, I think I might take the under.
That's probably fair. I mean, like that's how most rebuilds go. You pick your two guys and you go, right? Like,
yeah.
Like that's usually how it goes. The Rockets are, that's why these next couple years of data collection are so important, right? Because not all these guys might get adequate playing time or adequate touches. So practice evaluation is going to be important. I think Rafael Stone, Eli Wittes, the front office, all those guys have to be at every practice and evaluate these guys. Because you might not get that proper evaluation time in game. And maybe that's why they felt confident trading away Josh Christopher, Ty Washington, and Usman Garuba. Maybe they, you know, were all, I, you know, it's not maybe. I know they were at these practices, and I know they were evaluating while they were there. So, you know, maybe in those evaluations, they're like, listen, you know, I know the public is higher on these guys, but we're also behind closed doors, and we just know that these are our three worst assets. And so it's just mm-hmm. better to just trade them while they're not while it's easy to trade them versus, you know, waiting till we get to restricted free agency and playing a game we don't want to play.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to sort of frame it. I think it's hard sometimes to picture it that way because you have all these. I mean, even with OKC, it's like all those guys everyone's so high on right now are not going to be part of the finished product. That's just not how the rebuilds work. And so to project that far ahead is tough, but it does feel like the Rockets might be more willing to be extra aggressive on that front than maybe some of these other teams. And a part of it's the pick commitments they have going to OKC in the next couple years. But it seems like they're willing to accelerate the process more than a lot of these other teams that are open to the slower burn type of rebuilds.
Yeah, and by the way, you mentioned that like you weren't trying to come off as the Sengun guy. Like, I want to double down. Like, whoever I had on the podcast was going to come off as a Sengun, like an anti-Sengun guy compared to me, right? It's like, it's all relative, right? Like, whoever you put up against me Like, I'm probably going to be higher on Sengun than that guy, right? And that's been the case with every podcast I've done since Sengun was drafted. So Dan is not on Sengun, right? Rockets fans listening to this. Every other person I would have brought on would have said the same thing, would have had the same disagreement. You know, maybe not to the level, but to a different level, right? Like, I just think Sengun is a guy I'm willing to go out on an island with. I'm fine. I'm okay with going out on an island. If I lose, I lose. It's basketball. Who cares? I think with trying to figure out who your North Star is, that's probably the most important discussion, right? Like, like, yeah, you can find out who's better between Sengun and Jabari, but if neither of those guys are your North Star, it doesn't matter. Like, that's kind of an ancillary conversation. You just don't want to trade away who your best guy is going to be, right? Who your eventual best prospect is. You need to find that guy out like immediately. Like, you need to assess that right away. You can afford to lose your second best prospect. You can't afford to lose your first best prospect. You know, like, I think the Thunder are fortunate in that they already know SGA's our guy, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, we might, Giddy might be eventually our second best prospect, but it doesn't matter because SGA's our guy, and we can make it work with Chet Holmgren being the other cornerstone piece, you know? Like, I think it's easier to have that conversation when you find your North Star. And if there's a goal for the Rockets this year that I want them to have, it's go find that guy, please. Like, I'm tired of waiting because I would like someone to separate themselves from this pack so it's an easy conversation. So next time when we do this podcast, it's more of a debate about who's number two versus who's number one, right? And, like, whether that's Jalen Green, Alperen Sengun, I don't care. Find that guy. So it's easier to rebuild, so you're not in danger of trading away your best guy. You don't want to be that team. You don't want to be this cloud that the Rockets currently are, right? Because the reason people aren't going out on a limb to say that, you know, this is the best young core in the NBA, because they don't. Nobody knows who the hell that guy is, right? If it was clear, like, hey, oh, Jabari is, like, he is going to be like Kevin Durant. Like, people would like, jump on this team and say, man, this Rockets young core is really, really exciting. And people are saying that now, but they're not saying it to the same extent they're saying about these other teams, because they know Tyrese Halliburton's the guy, right? We're building around Tyrese Halliburton. He's going to be our heliocentric ball handler. And whoever Houston ends up being, whoever that guy ends up being for Houston, will more clearly outline everyone's level of excitement. And I think, you know, it's going to be very fascinating to see, you know, who was more right on these conversations on not just that guy conversation, but, like, that, you know, who's better between Tari Eason and, like, Cam Whitmore, right? Like, that you know, those conversations are going to be interesting to watch in a year. So, yeah, I'm very, very anxious, scared, nervous. Like, I'm in perpetual fear that they're going to trade away the guy, right? You know who I think that guy could be, and it doesn't seem like he's being optimized. So if he's that, you know, if they eventually trade him away, I'm taking my pants, right? Like, I don't want that to happen. So I hope they give everyone a fair shake, you know, not just Sengun, not just Jalen, not just Jabari. Everybody, give them a look, give them the keys at least on a night, let them run a second unit, you know, like just. Get as much quality data as you possibly can before you rule guys out that you shouldn't have ruled out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm 100% with you there. And I think this is a big season because they clearly have expectations to get a lot better since that their pick is probably headed to OKC. But you also, like, you need to get better while you're also, as you phrased it perfectly, give these younger guys a fair shake to see who can be not just a part of our long-term program, but who can maybe be the face of it. And I think they're in an enviable position in the sense that I would, based on how high you are with Sengun, like, you do technically have four possibilities on your roster, which is more than most other teams in their situation have. It's just that would you rather have four possibilities or be in OKC knowing, oh no, it's Shea, or you could be in Spurs, you know, it's Wemby. But
and here's a controversial statement. I'd rather be those other teams that know. Right? Because
you would, because it informs the rest of your future, because, like, all these years are ticking off these contracts now. So, like, you, once you figure it out, oh, now all of a sudden Jalen Green's really expensive and the clock has, like, started ticking. When you know, like, okay, Shea's on a second deal, but, like, in the case of Wemby, when you know, that makes the Spurs, it's so much easier for them to build here moving forward. But you are in a better position. I don't know if it's a better position. I don't even want to say it's less precarious, but what's an interesting analog is, so look at Detroit, where they arguably have three options here when you're looking at Ausar Thompson, who some people probably wouldn't consider here, Jaden Ivey, Cade Cunningham. Maybe some people would throw in Jalen Duren, but they shouldn't. He's really good, but he's just not on that level. But like, they also kind of have, I think you look at Cade and the aesthetics of your game and the efficiency and the analytics haven't caught up with it yet, but you're like, no, he's probably that dude. And with the Rockets,
Jalen is a perfect analog to Cade in that respect, right? Like,
right.
Like analytics haven't caught up to both of these guys, but the belief is there, not only with the organization, but with most people, right?
Right. And so what I'm more so getting at is, in the absence of knowing, we have Hallie, we have Wemby, we have Shea, it's better to have, okay, well, like, it's not like we have no one, where it's like in Washington right now. Like, it's not Poole. Is it Bilal Coulibaly? It's probably, I love him, but like, I love that swing. So, and some of those teams are just starting out, but like, Washington's been in purgatory for whatever. So your reward for slogging through these last 3+ years or whatever is, okay, we don't know yet, but we have 4 legitimate possibilities. And that absolutely matters.
Right. Like, if one of these guys has a down year at the expense of finding out that guy, great. Like, I love that. Like, if some guy averages 30 points per game next year, and as a result, somebody who I may have been more excited about averages, like, you know, 18, 16, whatever, I don't care. Like, we found the guy, you know? Like, we found the guy to build everything around.
I think the best way to frame it, and I want to try and find, like, a good middle ground here, is if you said, I think Devin Booker's too high of a middle ground. If you said Jalen Green is going to have Bradley Beal's individual career accolade trajectory. I'm not talking about team winning championships, just that good of a player, but it's going to cost you 2 of the 4 guys we just mentioned. But you could play out the future, or I could tell you right now that Jalen Green is going to have Bradley Beal's being in the all NBA discussion, being in the all-star appearances. You're probably, if we're being brutally honest, would take the Bradley Beal route and say, well, I'll take Jalen Green, and then one of these dudes will stay because we know that Jalen Green is going to be an all NBA caliber player. I'm not talking health even. If Beal doesn't miss as many games, like, he probably has what, 2 or 3 all NBA selections rather than, what does he have, 1? Or does he have 2?
He has 1.
Right, yeah. Now? So I think that's an important part of all this. But at the same time, the fact that you have the 4 legitimate options is far from the worst case scenario, unless they all just, you know, implode this season.
No, I think it's fair.
And Beal has 1 all NBA. And so it's like, I can even frame it this way. Like, if I could tell you right now, Jalen Green will make 3 all NBA teams or more, but you have to give up 2 of the other 3 guys right now, or you can play out the future with these 4 to see what happens. Like, anything can happen there. You're probably taking the 3 or more all NBA plus 1 of those guys routes, I would think.
I would think about it. I'm enough of a poker player where I kind of want to roll the dice. Like, because I think, like, yes, it's nice to be a 3-time all, like, second team all NBA guy. Is that second team all NBA guy ever going to be the centerpiece of a championship team? Probably not. Like, I think it's you know, for example, Bradley Beal is probably like the second best guy on a championship team at the peak of his career, right? Like that's how good he was at the peak of his career. And that guy is awesome. But if I don't have the assets, if you're telling me I have to get rid of all these other assets I don't have the assets to go trade for the first guy anymore, then it's not worth it. I'd just rather roll the dice. You know what I mean?
I think it's reasonable to say whatever. I value the certainty of 3 or more all NBA selections is a lot. And
it
3
is.
Or more all NBA selections probably put you in the discussion of, you know, I just pushed you above Beal. It's like, we're kind of in, like, Devin Booker is going to wind up in that territory, I would think. And so, like, if I'm telling you it's Devin Booker and one of those guys, or all 4 of them and you roll the dice, I'm taking the Devin Booker in one of those
Fair
guys
enough.
Rather than roll. But I get yours is not like a bad, like, I think they're both completely valid responses, but I think that's it's both the challenge, the intrigue, and the benefit of the situation that the Rockets are in right now.
It's definitely like a tough call, right? Like, would you rather have this deep young team versus this, like, maybe a shallower young team, but like the North Star's there, right? Like, we all know which way we're pointing, right? and we all know which way the organization is you know, building to, around. I think that's a fair argument, right? Like, I it's a fair discussion. But whatever the case, the Rockets can kind of have their cake and eat it too if they just give everybody a chance, right? If they just give everybody a chance, they can have their cake and eat it too. So we'll see. We'll see if they actually are able to find that guy. I would be very interested to see how quickly that happens. Hopefully it's this year. We'll have multiple more discussions throughout the year. In either case, thank you so much for coming. Well, hold on. I do have a couple more questions, because we did talk a lot about what the Rockets have done this summer and what the Rockets have done to build out this core. So, like, stepping back and looking at their core and looking at, like, what they've done so far, like, how confident are you that the bones for a contender is there or can be traded for? Like, I realize that that's kind of a loaded question, but the way I view team building is, like, that's the bar. Like, that's how you judge these rebuilds. Whether or not you're able to successfully build something or pivot to something that could compete for a title one day, that should be your goal.
I would say on a scale of 1 to 10, let's say, probably like a 6.5. And a lot of that has to do with there's so many questions about the – like, so let's use Orlando as an interesting comparison as an example, because maybe they don't have the – I would view Paolo as the guy. But if you're that high on Franz, you're like, well, is it Paolo? Is it Franz? Could it be Anthony Black? But we also have more information about how all those guys, except for Black, are going to be used in this system, because there was more of this coherence there. We don't have that with the Rockets, so we still have questions about, well, how is Alperen Sengun specifically going to be used? And even, I think, Jabari, too, on offense. And then we just haven't seen Cam Whitmore. We haven't seen Amen Thompson yet. So, like, if you ask me this question halfway through the season, like, it could be an 8, because, like, the assets are there, and the upside is there. How does it all sort of coalesce in practice, though, is something we're still sort of waiting for. Not even just like, oh, this is what it looks like. What could this look like? Like, we have more information on a core like that's in Orlando, whereas like it's the same thing in Detroit as it is in Houston. The talent on paper is really there, and Detroit has less assets than Houston, but we just don't know how it's going to coalesce together.
No, fair enough. Like, if I were grading out like Rafael Stone's like job, like what he's done, like I would say it's probably a B plus A minus. Like, there are some decisions where I disagreed with him on, but like nothing major, right? Like, I think the only major thing is probably the 2021 draft, the top of that, right? Mobley and Green. That's probably the biggest disagreement. The other things are small, right? And if that's the case, like, I think he has done enough for me to where like he's a general manager I would extend. I'm not sure if he's like one of the guys I would give like the highest contracts in the NBA. Like, he's not at the Maury, Ainge, you know, Presti level. Like, I'm not saying he belongs in that club, but I think he's done enough for me where like, yeah, give him another contract. He's earned it, right? He's built enough here. He's recovered from where the Rockets were when Harden and Westbrook were demanding trades and they had like no draft picks and like the future looked really bleak. He's clawed them back from that to where we're talking about like, oh, there are four guys here that could potentially become that guy. So in that respect, I would give him like a B plus A minus on this rebuild.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think you could probably go a little bit lower just because of what the past, like, how did they squander any valuable time with Jalen Green, Sengun, just to cull more information from this group? So it might be fair to be that. Why did it take them so long to either not just get to this point, but like we don't even know that the coherence is going to manifest this year, because now there's so much talent on this roster that there's a lot of rotational questions, and there is not warring timelines, but just like, how does it, like, where does Jayshon Tate fit into this? And if Dylan Brooks is playing X minutes, what does that actually mean for Kevin Porter Jr.? What does that mean for Tari Eason? And so I might grade him a little lower, but given how they were foisted into this, like, and, you know, you can't hold the sins of, like, the previous, oh, they acquiesced to James Harden not wanting to play with Chris Paul anymore. You can't hold that against Raphael Stone. I would say the hand he was dealt, just from an asset perspective, of what they had given up all this stuff, Harden wanted out, I think he has done fairly well in that regard for sure.
Right. Like, and that's why, like, this idea that Rafael is like this bad asset management guy, like, no, like, he had like a bad asset management like moment, right? Where like he did that horrendous three-team trade with Dylan Brooks that involved all these second rounders and you know, first round selections going out the window. That doesn't mean he's managed the Rockets' assets poorly on the whole.
I still have questions about why they wanted Victor Oladipo as part of that like series of Harden transactions. But like, every executive has misses. So But like that is still, that's one that I just come back to. It's just like, Jared Allen could probably be on this team. I don't know what that means for Shangoon, or is Jared Allen Houston, but that's like one of the, like right off the bat, just like not great vibes.
If I were to like rank like his three biggest misses, it's potentially the Green Mobley thing. It's the picking Oladipo over the LeVert and Allen package, and it's this Brook Lopez pursuit that like really bothered me, right? Like those three are like, okay, those are the three worrying signs, but nothing there as of now. You know, if Mobley
he won the second Russell Westbrook trade, yeah, right? Just because they got assets out of Washington for that. No, I know they ended up with John Wall, but
they got a first round pick. Yeah.
Yeah. They got a first round pick. So, I mean like,
yeah. Yeah. I mean like, so like none of those three I would say are like major, like unless Mobley becomes like Giannis, right? To where it was so obvious, like, and they screwed that up, right? Then it's like, okay, like that's something they probably missed on. But
he's even inoculated against that a little bit, because one, people do not think, like, they haven't even looked at Mobley and seen like the Giannis flashes were there after year two. And like, as good as Mobley is, he was in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation. I still think people don't trust his offense at all. But you're also inoculated in the sense that, like, could it be more of a, and it's not a great look, but it's more of a like Luka Doncic, Trae Young situation, where Trae Young's an all NBA player and good, like one of the 20 best guys in the league, let's say. It's just that Luka's one of the five best.
Right.
It's like, it could be that type of it, because Jalen Green is still really good.
Right. Like you're hoping for this to be like a Chris Bosh outcome versus like a Kevin Garnett outcome, right?
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like I you know, I think there's still time. Like, you don't want to root against Mobley, by the way. If you're a Rockets fan, don't root against him, right? Like to just root for Green to be better, right? Whatever Mobley's going to be, just root for Green to be better than that. But yeah, it's going to be very fun to see how that works out. Overall, solid job. I would say again, in that tier where I'm giving him another contract, and I think he deserves the job. I think he's, you know, he's seems like a solid, competent guy. But I'm not saying he's in that like elite tier. I don't think he's done. He's not in the, like the incompetence de jure of like Charlotte, Portland. I would say is in there. Like there are a handful of teams where I still don't know what the hell they're doing. Like picking Brandon Miller at number two in the draft. Like what are we doing here? Like I think there are still those front offices out there, which, you know, surprisingly there are less and less of those as we move along. Mm-hmm. The league is getting smarter, but he's definitely in that middle of the pack region at the very least.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, look, his job's only going to get, in theory, it could get better, but it gets harder when you're starting to make decisions on, okay, these are core pieces, but how many of them are actually core pieces? What are we doing with their second contract? So it's like the time ticks on. You have to make harder decisions that I think will yield like more like clearer reflections of how good he actually is. But I would be with mostly everything. I don't know if I go quite as high as an A-, but I think he's done a solid job for sure.
Yeah, B+, A-, whatever. Like I'm not gonna like go to the mat for this guy, right? I just think he's done like a solid job, right? Like going from Daryl Morey to whatever it scares the hell out of you. What's gonna be next, right? Like, because you're going from the best, one of the three best general managers in the NBA in my opinion, to mystery box. And the fact that mystery box isn't a pile of dog is, you know, it warms my heart a little bit. I was scared. You know, when Morey left, it's like I was worried for the Rockets. And now that I'm invested as a fan again, like I'm like, okay, like thank God, you know, it wasn't that, because I would hate to hitch my wagon to a team that isn't run competently. It's never been like that my entire life, thankfully. And I like it to remain that way. But thank you so much for coming on, Dan. Tell the people where we can find your work and follow you on social media.
Yeah, I'm at Dan Pavalli on Twitter, which is where I put out all my work. I've same info on Blue Sky as well. And if you really like the NBA, you should check out the Hardwood Knox podcast, which covers the entire league. Hardwood Knox, spelled exactly as it sounds, at Hardwood Knox across all socials, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, like we're all over the place. Go check us out. And if you found me through this podcast, let me know so I can give Salman a virtual hug.
Thank you so much for coming on.